to a bunker system. It was a large bunker system. We found hospitals, and we came across four NVA nurses that were hiding out in one of the bunkers. They were nurses. We found medical supplies on them. They had black uniforms on. The Rock Marines came up to us, one of their officers, and they asked us if they could have the NVA nurses, that they would take care of them because we were sweeping through the area and that we couldn't take care of any POWs. So I imagine instead of killing them, we handed them over to the Rock Marines. Well, we were still in the area when the Rock Marines started tying them down to the ground. They tied their hands to the ground, they spread eagled them, they raped them, they raped all four. There was like maybe 10 or 20 Rock Marines involved. They tortured them, they sliced off their breasts, they took machetes and cut off parts of their fingers and things like this. And when that was over, they took the, on all four, they took pop-up flares, which are, it's an aluminum canister you hit with your hand, it'll shoot maybe 100, 200 feet in the air. They stuck them up their vaginas, all four of them, and they blew the tops of their heads off.
All right, there's a gentleman in the rear who's been trying for a while to ask a question.
And come forward.
If you'd like to come forward so we can hear what you're saying, and we'll try our best to answer your question.
Well, he's coming up here. Does anybody know if they're going to show those slides of Mr. Camille? Does somebody know? Could you let us know?
Jim?
Okay. Are you going to show them now? Before there's any more question, we'd like to show these slides. Mr. Camille, could
you narrate those?
Could you narrate the slides?
Okay, this is just a general picture of what the houses look like when we go through and throw our heat tablets in. They catch on fire very quickly, and there are people in these houses.
We get those house lights, please. People can't see them.
The houses are made of grass, and they catch very quickly. And a lot of times, if the people don't get out before we throw the heat tabs in, they don't get out at all. This is a picture. We carried aces of spades, and it was kind of like a game. And when we kill someone, you plant an ace of spades on him, and you'd pose with the body because it was something really cool to do, to show everybody how many people you killed. These are bodies that attacked us at a place called Alpha North, and after we killed them, they were inside our position, and we threw them on trucks, we took them to the middle of the village, and we dumped them out in the middle and left them there like that. Well, we didn't treat any people, any bodies, like they were human bodies. It was just like throwing out garbage.
Excuse me, the next session will begin at 12:30, which is approximately 1/2 hour from now.
This is WBAI in New York City. Before we continue with the Winter Soldier investigation tapes, we'd like to remind you very briefly that WBAI is a listener-sponsored radio station, which means that we can broadcast material that other media won't or can't, what's worse, won't. And if you'd like to help listener-sponsored radio, our phone number is 826-0880. 826-0880. We continue now with the Winter Soldier investigation.
All right. Brothers and sisters, or sisters and brothers,
I'd like to present to you the veterans from Vietnam that will be testifying about the atrocities that took place and created by American troops with the First Air Cav Division in Vietnam. To give you a little history on the First Air Cav Division, it is an air mobile division. It was the first created, and the First Air Cav was the first air mobile division to ever take place or to function in Vietnam. It arrived in Vietnam in 1965 in Quang Nung. Now, I'd like to introduce you to the first testifier. Testimonial testifier. Mr. John, or former Captain John K. Mallory. Mr. Mallory?
I'm Jack Mallory. I served as a captain with the 11th Armored Cavalry Regiment, which during most of my time in Vietnam from May 1969 to May 1970 was under the operational control of the 1st Air Cavalry Division. I served as regimental assistant civic action officer and civic action officer for the 1st Squadron 11th Armored Cav. I'd like to say a few words about treatment of Vietnamese civilians by members of the 11th Armored Cavalry Regiment. The destruction of crops and killing of domestic animals was common whenever the 11th Armored Cavalry Regiment operated in populated areas. Crops were destroyed in the building of defensive positions, and animals were run over when the tracks, armored cars, tanks, ran through villages. Civilian deaths were quite frequent. Vietnamese civilians were killed accidentally when tracks and tanks running through their villages, often at excessive speeds, struck them, went off the road, ran into their houses, hit their bicycles, etc. On at least one occasion, the village of An Phu in Binh Long province was struck by artillery fired from Quan Loi base camp, causing several casualties. A civilian riding on an ox cart just south of Quan Loi base camp was intentionally struck by an American aircraft which came in out of the sky, hit him in the head, traveled on. The man was killed. The aircraft was never identified. A helicopter, also never identified, dropped two white phosphorus grenades, these are incendiary grenades, into the village of Sa Trac, also in Binh Long province, burning down several buildings, burning two small Montagnard children. In Loc Ninh, a young boy about 12 years old was attacked by two American soldiers, severely beaten, and resulting in a broken arm. There is no reason known for this attack. On one occasion, a North Vietnamese Army nurse was killed by 11th Armored Cavalry troops. Subsequently, a grease gun of the type used in automotive work was placed in her vagina, and she was packed full of grease. On several occasions, enemy graves were violated, their skulls taken out of the graves, used as candle holders, conversation pieces. CS gas, better known as tear gas, was often used on civilians to chase them away from our positions where they came to sell or to look for valuable American trash in our trash dumps. On one occasion, this gassing of Vietnamese civilians was done by an American Army major. On another occasion, Vietnamese selling their wares in the area had their wares taken and destroyed by American troops led by two captains. One of them was myself. In August, in Binh Long province, north of An Lac, six friendly Vietnamese soldiers, civilian irregular defense group soldiers, were killed by helicopter gunships from the 11th Armored Cavalry Regiment. Although the CIDG area of operations was clearly marked on our tactical map in our tactical operations center, sheer carelessness of the duty officer from the 11th Armored Cav led him to give our gunships permission to fire at armed Vietnamese in the area, although it was quite well known that that there were friendly armed Vietnamese in that immediate vicinity. In general, U.S. attitudes towards Vietnamese civilians were not inhumane per se, but they were certainly not human. The Vietnamese civilians were regarded much as America regards her own minorities. A pat on the head for a trick, a kick in the ass for an imagined fault, and invisible the rest of the time.
Okay, the next speaker or testifier is James McKay, former E5. James?
My name is James McKay. I served with Headquarters 3rd Brigade of the 9th Division from October 68 to August 69, and then I served with the 1st Cav from August 70 to December 70. While attached to my Alpha Troop at Song Bay, our AO was from Song Bay north to Cambodia. During this time, our helicopters, our Cobra gunships, and a small observation helicopters would go out on search and destroy missions, more or less, where they'd go out and they'd shoot anything, any structures they saw. They'd shoot all structures, they'd shoot all people, be they men, women, or children, old men, old children, whether they had arms or not. They'd shoot all livestock, destroy all food. They'd destroy everything they saw that was man-made. Also, to prove that one of our other troops, to prove that they'd been getting body counts, the troop commander had given the order, not given an order, but let it be known that the next time Vietnamese were killed, the body would be taken and dumped from 200 feet right to Brigade Tock, right in front of the Tock. And this was done, and there was no reprimand to this officer. Explosives have been put in the dumps for the purpose of exploding and injuring men, women, and children while they're going through the trash, while they're going through this valuable trash. Consequently, one of my friends was blown and burned on the upper portion of his body due to the carelessness of the discarding of trash and the purposely planting of booby traps.
James, you stated, like, on the first time that A-Troop recon missions, right, the Cobra and the Loach, when they fired on any moving target, that meant men, women, and children, right?
This meant anybody they saw, whether they are men, women, or children, or if they had arms or not. One kind of joke that went between the pilots was if they fired or not upon anybody they saw was whether they waved or not. This was a kind of a joke going between the pilots, but it didn't count because they just shot anything they saw, any structures.
Mm-hmm. Could you clarify on the booby traps set into the fire dump? They were charges from the artillery battery, excessive charges from the artillery battery.
Right. The excessive charges were thrown in the dump, and then the fires were set so they would burn and burn people. At this time, when my friend was injured at the dump, it was artillery charges that had been thrown away and set to go off. How they were gone off, I don't know. I had found out that they were set there.
The fires were set.
Go ahead,
Jim. I had a lot of friends in artillery, and they had told me many times when we were sitting around talking that they put charges out there, the excessive charges they don't use during their midnight missions, they'd put in a dump. And these are all supposed to be destroyed in a certain point through EOD, and they were thrown in a dump with the purpose of going off.
They were deliberately set up.
Right.
So that the children,
right,
or the women, or the young men could walk into the dump, get close to the charges, and then they were set on fire, and they go up readily fast. Is that correct?
Right. And the dumps were all supervised. There was a supervisor there, but he was never there. He was supposed to be there. He was supposed to be making sure no ammunition was thrown away. There's not supposed to be any ammunition, any kind of explosive or any flammable materials thrown in the dumps, except trash. And consequently, when they were thrown in there, they were thrown in with the knowledge that someone might get hurt and would probably get hurt when these were burned or exploded, grenades and et cetera.
Okay, thank you. The next testifier is former Spec 4 Craig. Craig?
The one incident I'm referring to is the 2nd Battalion, 8th Brigade, their policy of mortaring the local dump every night. The statement reads, I was stationed at LZ St. Barbara roughly between the months of March and August 1969, and it was battalion-originated policy to mortar the neighboring dump on the pretext, quote, the gooks are scavenging food, unquote. It was proven that it was civilians from the town of Loch Ninh. Roughly 2 a week were killed, and an occasional injury often treated battalion first aid hooch.
All right. Craig, let me ask you a question. How many black personnel, and when I say black personnel, how many black men were assigned to your company?
A company, the strength varied between 80 and 120. It was usually about a third.
A third?
A third of all personnel, yes.
Let me ask you this. When you walk point, it's well known to all its vets that when an initial fire takes place, that usually within the first five people are the ones that are hit. Is that correct?
That's true.
Is it readily, is there constantly use, how are the blacks used as far as walking point? Explain that for me, okay?
They're considered to be more adept at walking point, plus the added factor, the blacks came under a lot of blame for some of the so-called fragging that goes on. Anybody under suspicion found himself on point usually pretty fast.
Thank you. The next speaker, the testifier, is former Spec 4 Robert Wiktorski. I'm sorry, that's E5.
Okay. All right, my first complaint would be in August, I worked with in an area near Quan Tri province, or in Quan Tri province, near the city of Quan Tri. We were on a searching mission.
Excuse me, Craig. Robert, could you start off by giving your company your unit and the time you served in Vietnam?
I was with Charlie Company, 2nd of the 12th, 1st Air Cavalry. And I served there from May of 68 to May of 69. Now, in August of 68, we were sent on a searching mission of a supposedly evacuated or deserted village. Now, the policy of searching a village is that they take the whole company. Now, that is about 160 guys. It varies. And they put you on line in front of the village. Then they just tell you to walk straight into the village and keep abreast to the man next to you.
WBAI New York.
Ahead of one another. Now, we had come in contact with booby traps that day. Now, it stands to reason that if you put 160 men online and they're going to cover every square inch of this village, they're theoretically going to turn up every booby trap that was set in that village. And you can't always see the booby traps. We took a bunch of prisoners there, approximately 30, and we were going to evac them for questioning, bring in a helicopter and lift them out. Now, as the helicopter came in, they were going to remove the wounded also, and we took fire. We received one mortar round. They got the civilians and wounded out, and nobody was hurt as a result of that mortar round. But we were given the order to move out again, and as we did, I turned behind me, and some of the drag elements, some of the guys that were lagging behind, were burning hooches. It wasn't our policy to destroy anything, but for some unknown reason, somebody had set fire to about 4 hooches. It was also our policy to frag any suspected position. Now, every one of these houses in this village has an adjoining bunker in case of mortar attack. See, they're going to get it from either end. If they support the U.S., they're going to get attacked by the Vietnamese, the North Vietnamese. Fragment grenade.
Excuse me one second, please. I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't cross-examine him until after he's finished his statement and we finished all. Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Now, they used these bunkers that were adjacent to their houses more or less as an air raid shelter rather than a fighting position. Most of the openings or the access holes to these bunkers were inside the houses so that if a person was in the house and something happened, they could run into the bunker. Now, on that particular day, there was an order given to frag all suspected positions. And it got to the point where you didn't so much look out for the booby traps as you were looking out for the guy next to you who was throwing grenades in every direction. You yell a term, fire in the hole, when you throw a frag. And like that just echoed all day. Fire in the hole. Now, the next day, we continued on our sweeping mission, and that night we set up a perimeter. I wasn't familiar with the area I was put in, so I took another man with me to sort of recon the area, and I engaged a booby trap. I was wounded as a result of this. Now, if this village had been swept properly, or as it was supposed to have been, that booby trap should have been discovered. I was looking for booby traps, but they're pretty well hidden. They're pretty hard to see. Another incident I'd like to mention is that an LZ Grant, now this is near Tain Inn. This is in Tain Inn province. We had been hit. We were attacked. The landing zone itself was attacked at night by NVA soldiers. They had taken approximately 200 bodies on the wire, on the barbed wire, that were dead. To best of my knowledge, they had only captured one prisoner, and he was a high-ranking NVA official. En route from LZ Grant to Tain Inn for interrogation, this man was pushed out of the helicopter, approximately a quarter mile from the perimeter, consequently died as a result of the fall. On that same night that the base was attacked, they called in jet air support. They had jets in the area, and they had helicopter gunships in the area, working, you know, in just a scattered pattern. They asked the jet to move in a little closer to the perimeter for closer support. And the pilot, I guess, misjudged the perimeter and dropped a napalm bomb on one of the bunkers. As a result, killing one man who was formerly with my unit and was put in the rear as a safer place to be because he only had 29 days left in country. It was usually a policy where that if you got, you know, within a short time of your DRO state, that they would try and give you a position that would be less detrimental. Now, I don't know how detrimental that can be. The guy was burned beyond recognition. The only way we know it was him is because he was missing and he had a wallet on him. Another incident I'd like to mention was just after getting out of the hospital, my unit had pulled a big shift from up north in the I Corps area to the 3 Corps area near Tainan. And this was in Kuchi. It's a large base camp. They have planes land there, and it's pretty civilized. My unit was lining up for chow. We were going to go eat supper in the mess hall, and the CO gave the order to spread it out in the chow line. Now, the reasoning behind this is that when you're out in the field, guys get a little hungry and a little anxious for some hot chow. They tend to bunch up together. And as a result, it can be pretty bad if somebody pops a couple rounds at you. Like a mortar round could kill up to 30 guys if they're grouped together and it's placed right. But in a big base camp, it's relatively pretty clear. Guys are walking around with baseball hats on. Trucks are driving by. Guys are swimming in swimming pools. And our CO told us we had to wear our helmets in the chow line and spread 5 meters apart. So some of the guys expressed their you know, feelings about this. And the CO said, all right, you're not going to spread it out. And went and got a fragment grenade and fragged our chow line. As a result, he wounded one of my ammo bearers. He wasn't hurt too bad, but what the heck? When you're fighting one enemy, you don't have time to fight your friend or your leader. Another incident happened up in the I Corps area. We had been working the Street Without Joy. It's adjacent to Highway 1. It leads from a place called Wonder Beach almost directly to, at that time, was the cavalry headquarters, Camp Evans. And we were told to establish a perimeter and set up, you know, positions, which we did. And as the days passed, more and more people were coming to this perimeter, engineers and the like, and setting up barbed wire and extending the perimeter, making it bigger. They were planning on making a large stationary camp in this area. Now, in the early days of this, when there wasn't any barbed wire, it was just us guys on the line, they had a stringing barbed wire. I was on a barbed wire detail, and that night I had to pull a ambush. The area we were in was hilly and small brush. You could see for miles, clearly for miles. And I commented to one of the guys that was on ambush with me. I asked him, what makes you think that anybody is going to come walking along through the middle of nowhere? You know, just in the middle of the night, you know, helter-skelter. And he says, well, we've got two bodies. We were given the order not to take any prisoners or wounded on this mission. If we ambushed anybody that night, they had to be killed. They had taken two prisoners earlier, and they were shot, and their bodies were placed approximately 30 yards from the perimeter site, from the ambush site, and Claymore mines were set up in a defensive position around the bodies in order to decoy as bait. We never executed an ambush. Nobody ever came along. So following about 3 days of this, a bulldozer from the engineering outfit came over and just pushed dirt over the bodies because they were starting to smell.